Welcome to Educated Conjecture, an Ipsos podcast that combines what the public thinks with what the experts think. In each episode, Ipsos's Mike College and Sean Simpson are joined by an informed guest to examine a current or emerging issue. Recorded on Valentine's Day 2022, the political scene in Canada is shifting, seemingly by the minute. To help us catch our breath, Daryl Bricker, Global CEO of Ipsos Public Affairs, joins the podcast to talk about topics such as the ongoing trucker protest, complications surrounding the implementation of the Emergency Measures Act in Canada, and challenges that the Trudeau government will face as we move forward. And now, on to the episode.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Educated Conjecture. Sean, we're going to jump right in because it's always good to have our boss on the call.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we don't want to keep him waiting. We have Daryl Bricker here. I think, Daryl, last time we had you here, there was a federal election. Lots of things were going on politics. And today, we want to talk a little bit about the truckers' protest. How are you today?
I'm slightly perplexed by the information that I'm getting out of Ottawa. What is wonderful about all of this, though? And wonderful is a word that probably is inappropriate in this situation. But what is interesting in this situation is what a civics lesson it is to people about how our government works,
and or doesn't.
And you know, all those who feel that you know we have a presidential system in which a president can, like in the United States, can stand up and declare something and everybody will just go in a specific direction and he can override anything that happens, you know, say, for example, like, you know, putting in place a national spending program or anything like that. To a certain extent, we can do that in Canada when our governments put their minds to it. But it's a system that's based on an awful lot of cooperation in this country. And particularly around the Emergencies Act, as we're all getting educated, because it is a relatively, what's never a piece of legislation that's been around for a while, but hasn't been used before. We're getting a very good civics lesson in how federal systems work. So what we're hearing today, at the time that we're recording this, is that there's four provinces, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta, and Quebec, that have problems with agreeing with the Prime Minister proceeding with implementing the Emergencies Act. So how this all goes down when you don't have unanimous consent in the provinces will be very interesting. And we haven't heard from the House of Commons, where this is supposed to move lickety-split through the House. And I was reading some of the rules today about it's almost run as a committee of the whole, where they vote on things all together, the assumption being that everybody agrees. And with Quebec out, that puts some interesting pressure on the Bloc Québécois. And with the three Western provinces, and BC being the exception, the fourth other Western province, still it looks like aligning themselves with the government's desire to pursue the Emergency Act. But the Conservative Party is now also pressured into probably doing something that will support the Western premiers. So it what looked like it was like slam dunk, big leadership moment. I'm going to stand up and put in place the things that need to be put in place in order to be able to deal with these protests, all of a sudden turned into the realities of how federalism works in this country, and along with the realities of how minority governments work in this country. So it's a very, very interesting civics lesson.
It's interesting because last week when we came up with our data that said 46% say there's some legitimacy and some sympathy. Maybe I don't like necessarily what they've done or their tactics, but I understand how they got there. And I feel for the truckers or for the protesters. And we observed that's higher amongst young people. And I think you said it's interesting because most all of these issues in the past have had regional splits. This one actually seems to have an age split or an income split. But yet region is coming back because we're so driven by that. In this country, the way we're set up to change the dynamics again.
Yeah, well, there's no age structure for political decision making.
We don't vote on age.
Yeah, there's no other types. It's based on geography, and we could see in the data that there were differences of opinion based on region, but they weren't the notable things. They were the expected things. There were differences in terms of partisanship, political partisanship. By the way, one of the things that we didn't really get into when we put out the release was the The proximity between Bloc Québécois supporters and Quebec and Conservative Party supporters, and how they regarded a number of issues, a number of aspects of this issue. The two parties that tended to be most aligned with the truckers tended to be the Bloc and the Conservatives first, but the Bloc second. So it's turned into the reality of Canadian government and the reality of Canadian politics finding its way into an issue that I think for any outsider who would look at it would say, well, this is obvious that we should be all getting together to deal with this situation. But what is obvious from the outside is not so obvious when it comes to how politics and government work in this country.
I suppose the optics of invoking a National Emergencies Act when four of your premiers aren't acknowledging that there's an emergency worthy of it is those optics are not good. Daryl, how did we get to a point here where there are deep cleavages emerging that we haven't seen for decades? You know, we're used to East versus West. We're used to, say, Quebec versus English Canada, but we're not used to boomers versus millennials. We're not used to higher income versus lower income. How did we find ourselves where we are right now?
Well, I think the reason that we're finding ourselves in this position is that the country's changed. I mean, that might sound obvious, but and the most meaningful changes that we've seen in the country have been demographic. And they relate to the distribution of the population in the country. So what parts of the country are growing and shrinking? And, one of the things that we all looked at actually last week rather than this week was the new results coming out from the 2021 census and what it tells us about how the country is moving. And not that I want to plug my own book, but I will next, it is about exactly that, how everything about the country is changing because the nature of the people is changing. So it's the geographic distribution, but it's also the fact that we're rapidly aging, that we're not having kids the way that we used to, that the workforce is changing in a lot of very interesting ways, that technology is having a big effect on how the country changes. Mike and I were talking just a little while ago about the fact that these truckers don't just, ride the roads, they ride the internet an awful lot. And what we're seeing in this situation is how you can use these digital tools to not only pull together a network of people who are like-minded to cause something like this to happen, but also you can raise funds in a way that we never seen before in order to support it. And the thing that I keep coming back to with journalists when I talk about this is, oh, you guys are talking about truckers. You mean the number one occupation for Canadian men? I mean, you guys don't know any truckers, people who are working for the media, probably, but it's the number one occupation for Canadian men. So this is not a small group of people. And you may say 90% of truckers are vaccinated. True, but how much is this really about vaccines?
Yeah, but
because if it was really about vaccines, a whole bunch of things have been announced by the government of Ontario today. By other governments have been recently announced in terms of how they've been going to be dropping regulations and rules related to how we're going to interact with each other as we move out of this pandemic. You would think that they would take this as a victory and run, but it's about more.
Yeah, we've seen, as you saw in our data, we've seen a pretty steep decline in those who think the system works for them, those who think country's going in the right direction, those who are satisfied with where we are today. Like those are all trailing down over the last 2 years, and arguably, they were down as early as 2018. We started to see some of those shifts. And the pandemic threw a curve in, and we had to deal with some very pressing issues that we focused on. But I think the sentiment has been from a lot of people that there's a portion of the population who doesn't feel things are working for them. And I think that's what's bubbling up. So the vaccines may have started this, or the vaccine mandates may have been the I know you don't like it, the tipping point. The issue has evolved very quickly and broadened, and now we find where we are. But just fast forward one sec. If you think about sort of the short-term agenda, right, we have a budget coming up. We have to do something on climate change, reconciliation, economic renewal. How do we handle those issues in the shadow of this, assuming this gets solved and we're 6 weeks out?
Well, what gets really interesting is the politics of all of this. I mean, there's some really practical issues, but there's also some interesting political issues too. So one of the things I was reading today was what happens if this bill, this Emergencies Act, doesn't pass. Is that a confidence vote? The second thing is that there will absolutely be a confidence vote, guaranteed, within the space of the next 3 months. And that is because the federal government has to bring out its budget, which is automatically, again, a confidence vote. One of the things, to get back to your previous question, and it ties into what we're talking about right now, Sean, which was, what does this tell us about the country? You know, how did we get here? One of the things that we know is that this is not a popular federal government. Justin Trudeau was very popular back in 2015, but as we got into 2018 in that election campaign, and in particularly this last election campaign, he kind of burnt his last bridge with Canadians. He's now a liability for his party. I mean, the numbers that we've been seeing coming out in terms of how he's been managing this particular crisis, we didn't ask it, but I've seen a couple of other credible pollsters who've asked the question. His numbers on this are not good. So where we're also stuck into is a situation in this country in which we've got a federal government managing this crisis that is not a popular federal government. Now, sometimes what happens is when a government manages a crisis, there's a bit of a rallying behind the flag and people come to the support of the government and they get very focused on being all in this together, as Mike likes to remind me on the pandemic. And that's where Justin Trudeau was back at the start of this and for the first 3 or 4 months. But as we went through the last election campaign, his numbers were not good. And they really haven't recovered. So he finds himself, even though he won a couple more seats in the last election campaign, in even a more precarious situation than he was after the 2019 election campaign. It's a very difficult situation that he finds himself in. So he's got premiers that aren't prepared to go along with his national leadership on this issue, which is a problem. He's now got potentially in the House of Commons, opposition parties that he probably thought he was going to get a unanimous motion from, in terms of this this act, saying no, thank you. And he's got a public that's divided.
How is the discussion or the nature of the protest, how has that evolved over the last couple of weeks? It started with truckers coming from the West protesting vaccine mandates at the border. But where we are now seems to be very different from where we were just 3 weeks ago. Help me understand that evolution of this protest.
So at the start of this, it appeared to be more specifically about the vaccines and the vaccine mandates. That's what everybody was told. But it was pretty clear as that they rolled across the country, because it started in Vancouver, that they were collecting a lot of odds and sods on the way. And it started to become about more. By the time they got to Ottawa, they were, you know, issuing manifestos about talking to the governor general and, going after the government directly. I mean, this was no longer about vaccine mandates. And over the space of the last couple of weeks, we've kind of transitioned into a period where I think for the last 4 or 5 days in particular, but you could extend it further, and particularly over the course of this weekend, it really turned into a debate about public order. Like, you know, okay, message delivered, what you guys wanted to say, you've said it. And now it's really starting to cause some damage. Not particularly at the Ottawa protest, but at the protest at the border in Windsor. And that's where you saw the OPP move in and move them out with after a week with some alacrity, I would say, over the last couple of days. So they got that out of the way. So it became about the border and that kind of thing. And now it's moved on. So it was about public order, certainly the case in Ottawa. But the events of today related to this Emergency Act now moves it back to a question about government competence.
Yeah, I think it's gone from...
Who's in charge?
I was going to say, I think it's gone from who's responsible for it happening at all. And the argument was it's a group of, as the Prime Minister said, a fringe group with unacceptable views who are bringing this to Ottawa, the capital. And others were saying, well, actually, no, it's divisive politics that's led to this. So there was initial discussion about who's responsible. Now it's who's responsible for cleaning it up and who has the authority to do it and who can get it done or who can get it done.
And Trudeau was looking kind of weak on the issue. People are saying, well, where is he? He's not doing anything. And now he's trying to do something and he's meeting roadblocks along the way. And I'm dare your point about people rallying around their leaders during time of crisis is well made, but it's hard to imagine how Trudeau's going to come out of this smelling like roses.
And yeah, that's a really good point, Sean. And it's not over. And fortunately for your listeners, have to listen to this, but you guys know it well. I've been around this for a long time, way too long for anybody's sanity to remain intact. And some might argue that it's not. But I've been through a few of these before. OCA, Idle No More, Black Lives Matter, the recent the blockades of the railways and other infrastructure in the country. And these have a similar trajectory. They always have a similar trajectory. It starts off with, oh, what's this about? And as people start paying attention to it, it's, okay, well, who's right and who's wrong? We get into that for a while. And then we get into the period, well, this is going on for an awful long time. Who's in charge? Law and order. I blame the people who are causing this to happen. And then it moves to the next phase, is the one that we're moving into right now, I would say, is who's in charge? Who's in charge? Somebody has to have a responsibility for maintaining public order. And where the public opinion effect tends to be then is on the governing party. It tends to be on the government. And it's the inability to be able to do the one thing that every government has a fundamental responsibility for, which is to maintain public order. If it can't do that, that really raises a lot of questions about its ability to even govern anymore. So the government's in a pretty precarious situation. And they've decided to play the emergency act card. I don't mean to pretend it's a game. It's certainly not. Badly handled, there could be some people hurt by everything that's going on here. So it's very serious. But it is one of the most precarious situations I've seen a government in since probably the 1995 Quebec referendum.
Darryl, what do you make of the high levels of support amongst young people, both in our data, support for feelings of legitimacy and sympathy for the cause, and as you said in other people's data, support for the tactic of the protests comes out higher amongst young people. The prime minister was elected on a youth wave to a certain extent, and now this is the group that's saying, you know what, I'm sort of okay with what's going on, more so than the rest of the population.
Yeah, we've talked about that today a bit. Initially, when I saw our data, I saw it as almost like a class argument, where it was people who had the most precarious employment, the lowest income, would look at the truckers and say, you know what, I feel your pain and I'm with you. I think there's a certain element of that. But then there's another element, which is this next generation in which protest is seen as a legitimate political act. It's not seen as civil disobedience. It's seen as political expression. And we saw this also in the data that we did on the questions that we asked on Black Lives Matter during the recent protests that we had over that. And you saw, again, it was younger people. And at the time, it was, well, they're more multicultural, they're younger, they're obviously, more attuned to this because they've been educated to this. Maybe they're cultural icons or people who are expressing these kinds of things. So we looked at it as cultural connection. But I'm wondering if it's a combination of cultural connection and comfort with civil disobedience as a form of political expression. I think it's a bit of both.
Yeah, certainly in Latin America and in Europe, it's pretty common practice that protests go along with democracies, it seems to anyway. I wonder how much of it comes from general dissatisfaction with the direction of government and where it's gone and people feeling like this is the only way I can have my voice heard. The system doesn't seem to be working. So I'm supportive of protests if for nothing else than to put these issues in front of our leaders to have these conversations.
Yeah, that's going to be one to really watch. I think maybe back in the 60s, when I was obviously too young to be doing this, if we were doing the kind of polling that we're doing now, I'm wondering if we would have seen, because there was so much civil disobedience among young people, because at the time it was the baby boom generation. It was the biggest part of the population. I'm wondering if they would have had a different view than, say, for example, people who grew up in the 80s and 90s, in which this was not a very common way in Canada to express your political views. Yeah.
All those people from the 60s are now very well anchored in our data in the, this is about law and order and needs to be cleaned up.
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly we moved to the law and order part of this. But, you know, there is really something to be said for people evaluating governments based on whether or not they can actually assert their will and whether or not they've got the support of the rest of the public. And the danger in all of this is when people have private feelings that they don't publicly express because they see that, you know, it may be not supported by the, you know, a panel on CTV or something like that. They're with their university educated friends and they happen to say, well, you just don't understand, and they pat them on the head. When they start seeing, you know, representations of people who agree with them being comfortable to be able to, you know, express their disagreement with something that's going on, then all of a sudden it emboldens them. And empowers them. We've seen this on other issues before. So I'm wondering if there's going to be a bit of that going on too. So it's going to be this really interesting, what looked like a very clear path through the course of, you know, over this next few days has now been, you know, distorted by the political realities of the country. And that's the weakness of the federal government itself. And you know, the weakness of our federation to be able to do things kind of unanimously and move quickly in a single direction, what that's going to lead to in terms of the truck protests. And as Mike said, and I'm going to steal what he said to me before because I think it's really important, there's not a huge incentive for these people to leave. And there's really only two ways they can go. You either get them to leave or you make them leave. And making them leave is a lot harder than it looks. Or people might think, and you can read all sorts of articles about the complexity of towing, you know, big rigs, and you know the potential for other types of resistance and that kind of thing. So, it's going to be interesting.
One of the biggest things is, you know, we've had a history of closing down, for lack of better description, tent protests, where you can tell that the tactic is come in quickly, tear them down quickly, and move along. You can't do that with 200 some odd trucks. They're just not going to fold up.
418, Mike.
418 trucks. Okay, even worse. So you can't do that. You can't fold up 418 trucks. Yeah. This is a long, protracted pulling them out a couple at a time. It's going to take a while. Even if they decided today we're going to start towing vehicles, this doesn't get solved quickly.
And we also found in our data, Sean, that 47% of Canadians actually disagree with the Prime Minister not talking to protesters. So is there space here for some sort of a discussion? Maybe there is, maybe there isn't, but it would certainly be better if they could get them to leave rather than make them leave.
Well, and you saw Jim Watson, the mayor of Ottawa, had a discussion with them and they backed off out of some residential areas. So there's been some give and take.
Has the federal government in particular, but I mean, I guess you could extend it to the Laurentian elite, as you like to say, Daryl, have they completely underestimated the size of the minority here?
Yeah, I think that what has happened is they have not understood the nature of the opposition. So they want to put it down to, and the Prime Minister described it exactly correctly, you know, misogynists, racists, anti-vaxxers, and people who should probably be wearing tinfoil hats, his exact quote. The problem is that's not 46% of the Canadian population.
Not even close.
There is an element of that to this, but it's not 46%. So when you say to somebody who's in that 46% that that's who you are, that's a problem. And it doesn't really leave the door open to have much of a conversation. So that's where he's put himself. I mean, and you can see where it came from. I mean, he's had this point of view all the way back to the first moment that he came into politics. He certainly campaigned with this type of rhetoric during the election campaign because he believed it was working for him. And I don't know if it was just that he thought the election campaign was continuing, that he could use just the same, you know, pull out the same recipe card and say the same thing over again, and that people would accept it as he believed that they did, and his campaign did, team believed he did during the campaign. By the way, I don't think it really worked for him there either. It's put him in the situation that he's in right now, where somebody has to back down, and you certainly hate to see that it's the civic authority that has to back down in order to make this happen. But that's where we are. You can't insult people and expect that they're going to want to talk to you and open their doors to you tomorrow. Something has to change.
And yet he's not the first, and we're in a long line of wedge issues moving to wedge policies that have, because it's worked in politics, right? Quite frankly, it's interesting. I was talking to someone on the weekend, and I said, it's sort of the equivalent of if Sean and I ran competing airlines, that my entire airline philosophy would be run on telling people that if they get in Sean's plane, they're going to die because it's going to crash, right? So just, there's only the two of us. As long
Sean,
as
Sean, I'm flying your plane, buddy.
Don't fly Sean Air.
I have a very nice first class,
right?
Girl.
but that's how politics has worked for the longest time, right? It is one step. You know, my plane's got free gin and tonic, and in Sean's, you'll die because it'll crash, becomes a very divisive way of looking at it and polarizes the population. Because if you're one of Sean's clients, you're like, I don't want to talk to Mike or deal with her anymore. But that's how it's worked. And there hasn't been this, let's admit it, you know, Sean can fly a plane just as well as Mike can. And I'm beating the analogy to desk. I know, death, no. But it's hard to get off that track, I guess, is my point.
Well, you know, this is one of the when people are so inundated with so much information in their day-to-day lives, one of the ways to get their attention is the type of lurid comparisons that you're mentioning. But by the way, it's not just the Trudeau government. We saw Aaron O'Toole campaign the same way. We saw Jagmeet Singh. What was he saying? He was talking about anti-Muslim, race baiting and all that kind of stuff related to these, to the protesters. I mean, some pretty horrific things are being said all over the political spectrum. So
Hillary Clinton, basket of deplorables.
Right. And that's essentially what that's what he decided to do. And you saw what happened to Hillary Clinton as a result of it. We'll see what happens to Justin Trudeau as a result of it. But the other person who's taking a huge risk in all of this is Pierre Poilievre, who is the person that is touted as most likely to lead the Conservative Party after a leadership convention. And he's taken the exact opposite approach, which is to sidle up to the people who are protesters. That could be incredibly dangerous for him too, because the thing is, he's no more in control of those protesters than Justin Trudeau is. They have a mind of their own, and they're going to do their own thing. And by the way, they're not necessarily looking at any of this through a political lens. Their agenda isn't supporting one political party or another political party. They're not even really sure what their agenda is. They don't even really have a leader.
Yeah, you and I talked earlier about how a couple people on Twitter saying they're losing the PR war. And I'm like, I don't think they think they're in a PR war.
No.
They don't care. They don't. They're just...
Well, what they're seeing today is that the Ontario government is dropping a lot of their pandemic control mechanisms. The federal government is now saying that they're going to be changing some things that relate to traveling in and out of the country. All of the things that are associated with getting back on track are happening. If you're the protesters, you can say, well, that's happening because of me. It's working. It's working. In fact, I saw one article before I came on where a journalist was saying Ford never should have announced what he did today, because all it does is reinforces the protest. Guy's got a point.
Yeah, well, it might reinforce other protests that want something else, right?
That says, well, that's the next thing, Mike, is okay, what did we learn here? What did we learn? Trucks are barricades.
But that gives them a lot more influence, doesn't it?
They're barricades and they're redoubts, like you would have in a fortress. And that's the lesson here. I mean, and that's why, I'm sitting in the city of Toronto today. The city of Toronto blocked every street to downtown Toronto, up Hospital Row and everywhere, with buses across across all of the intersections to not allow anybody to go anywhere. And there was a protest in Toronto at Queen's Park, but it was, 100 people, maybe a couple hundred, with signs and flags, not a vehicle to be seen. All that had to happen to get the city to go completely paralyze its downtown was somebody had to put on social media the rumor that some of the truckers might be coming to town, and that was enough. So it's not even just doing it anymore. It's the potential that they could do it that's become a weapon in this fight.
Well, you have a right to congregate and a right to protest, but you know the government is going to make it as difficult for you as possible to do it. Are there more – like I really think that public opinion has been influenced by the protests. You know, people are thinking in ways maybe they hadn't before. Are there more public opinion gains to be had by the truckers and their supporters? Or by prolonging this, are they now – just doing themselves damage?
The thing that they've got that's reinforcing for them is that they are now affecting national government. So if their desire was to go in and change the agenda of the government, to change the priorities of the government, they've done it. So how many protests do you know that have been able to accomplish that? Not many. I mean, I can remember Oka. I mean, Idle No More, maybe a little bit. The
not,
blockade
not so swiftly,
of
the, anyway, right? It's well, been not very so quick action. Yeah.
Not so comprehensively. I mean, in the sense that what we've got here is, federal-provincial engagement now. We've got the national government completely focused on this. And the absence of anything else. I mean, we're hearing a couple of things about Ukraine, but the country's really focused on this at the moment. It's and the backdrop of every single shot on television or any photograph you see on social media or video you see on social media of anything that's associated with this is the Parliament buildings, which means it's a national issue. So what they've done is they've stolen away the national agenda. They've stolen away the narrative from the government. They've forced them to react, and some might even be able to argue, based on the actions that we've seen from the Ford government and a couple of other governments, that they've actually forced them to do certain things on the policy front. And for the municipal government in Ottawa, the city of Ottawa government, the mayor is now negotiating with them, which gives them legitimacy as a party as a body to be negotiated with. So it's pretty heady stuff if you're a trucker from Vancouver, who nobody ever listened to except at Tim Hortons when you went in and expressed your dismay with political issues and what was going on. Now the whole country's listening.
Maybe touch a little bit, Daryl, just on the dilemma we have right now about using polling to understand this in a world that's moving so fast. And I think this is part of, you mentioned the internet and social media and the twists and turns, but things have changed today. Well, actually, things have changed in the last 4 hours, let alone today. So much of the questions we would have asked this morning, we would ask different questions tonight. And we could field the questionnaire tonight, and it'd be completely off base by tomorrow morning, in terms of the right questions to ask.
Sometimes you get this in an election campaign, but the election campaigns have predictable rhythms, and they have an obvious end date. So what would I ask on anything related to the Emergencies Act? I don't know. Until 2 hours ago, I thought that everybody was on board for this because I could not imagine that a government would go forward saying that they were going to do this unless they pre-sold it to everybody they needed to pre-sell it to. Well, maybe they tried, but now we end up in a situation where we don't even have our governments united on this. So I could ask about the Emergency Act and whether the government was right to do it. I could ask how quickly they should act. We could ask, how do we expect the truckers are going to respond? How long is too long for them to stay on? That kind of thing. But now all of a sudden it just kind of blew up. Yeah. And I don't know what to ask. We have to see where it settles down.
Well, it's not settling down anytime soon because as we've been talking here, recording this podcast, I've got the CBC Olympics on in the background. They've just broken away. The Prime Minister is about to hold a news conference to announce that he's going to invoke the Emergencies Act and explain his rationale for doing so. So perhaps in the coming days we can chat again because we've got new content to discuss, no doubt.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Educated Conjecture. Follow us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts for another episode of Public Opinion and Informed Insights. If you have a topic you'd like to see covered on an upcoming episode, please send us an email at publicaffairs@ipsos.com. That's PUBLIC AFFAIRS at IPSOS.com.